And as I looked at this tiles on the ground, I was picturing squares. I said, okay, if I take three squares and I make a square out of it, square it, and then I subtract one, and I was picturing it, and then I pictured adding onto it. So now it's five squared minus one. And all of a sudden, my mind, I could kind of see and figure out, and I had my own proof for why any odd number squared minus one is divisible by eight. And I'm not going to bother with you. You can ask me later if you really care why. But I was so excited that I could figure out and explain and have a proof in my mind why any odd number squared minus one was divisible by eight. And I thought that was so cool. As I think about positive STEM memories in my class, what didn't make the short list, although it is cool, but it wasn't top favorite. Okay, those of you guys coming in, we're talking about, I'm going to back up just a minute. The very first slide is to think of a positive science, math, or engineering-related memory you have. So if you think about in your life any positive science, mathy, and like we're homeschoolers, so you can think outside the box. So if you don't love traditional math or science, think outside the box to anything that you are good at that might be related to building, whatever. So now I'm sharing some of my memories. So one of the things that didn't make the short list is when I was in high school, so a junior in high school, I was taking physics class, and I loved this physics class. And my teacher found out about this opportunity in Switzerland that they had just built this, it's called Large Hadron Collider in CERN. I don't know how many of you guys have heard about it. But it's one of the biggest science, at least at the time, it was the biggest science experiment in the world. It's like a college campus, actually spans part of Switzerland and France. And it's this big tunnel underground that where they would send these particles and they'd crash them and they'd see what happens. And it was huge. And they'd have hundreds and thousands of scientists working at this campus and figuring this out. And this was like a big deal because it was opening. It was finally built. And I was chosen to be on our high school's physics team. There's three students chosen, and our school was one of six in the whole United States, so I was one of 18 kids from the United States who was able to go see this really cool experiment. And it was cool. It was awesome. But when I think of positive STEM memories, that one doesn't quite have the same level of love for me as some of the others. And I'll explain that in just a second. But so hopefully you have something in your mind, a memory that you've thought of, and I'm willing to bet that memory you've thought of was a time that you figured something out that took some effort, right? So either you figured something out that took some effort, or you knew or did something that no one else knew or could do, right? And as I think about those memories, those were the most powerful ones for me, were when it was something I could do, when I could figure it out. In other words, you did something to be proud of, right? Or I did something to be proud of. And so the question I want to ask is, how can you foster these types of experiences for your kids? Right? So it's not just about the cool things they can do, but it's how can you foster these types of experiences, these types of memories for your children, where they are the ones that get to do this cool thing, right? And is the way that you're approaching science, when you think about the science class that you're teaching your kids, is it promoting this type of learning? So I'm going to say something a little bit controversial. I'm going to say it anyway. Doing traditional hands-on experiments with your kids is not helping them truly learn and enjoy science. So when I think of traditional hands-on experiments, they're fun. Kids love them. And it sounds controversial and it sounds crazy because we know that hands-on is important. And I agree, hands-on is important. And most of us know that intuitively. Because it's still better than just hearing information, right? But I want to quickly, I talked about this yesterday in my talk, and I'm not going to go into too much detail, but I want to just very quickly talk about the common pitfalls in science teaching in general. Okay, the first problem is that we often will like to show off what happens. We like to show off, let's look at this cool science experiment, we'll do an experiment, or we'll watch a Mark Rober video. I do love Mark Rober. We'll watch these cool things, and the kids are like, whoa, this is awesome. But it's like when I watch basketball and I watch someone dunk the ball, no matter how many times I watch them dunk the ball, that doesn't mean that I believe that I can go dunk a basketball, right? And so it's the same idea. When we watch cool science things, it doesn't make them think they can do science. The second thing that we do, and this is a more traditional science experiment, we say, okay, I know I want hands-on, so I'm going to have my kids do hands-on science. And so we'll get an experiment and we'll do the step-by-step checklist. And the kids are like, oh, this is boring. Or they're like, why am I here? Because it's like if I were having my daughter play chess and I was telling her, okay, move your queen over here, move your castle over here, move your pawn over here. She's not actually learning how to play chess. She's just doing what I tell her. And then there's no point of her even being there because I'm the one who's actually playing chess. And then we think, okay, well, the third thing that often happens then is we say, okay, well, I know I don't want just these step-by-steps, and I don't want to show them. I want them to actually do science. So I'll give them a 3D printer and be like, okay, go make something. Or I'll give them a bunch of chemicals, or I'll give them a microscope. Go look at stuff. But it's like putting a kid in front of a piano and saying, go make music. And they say, where do I even start? Right? I don't even know how to do this. And so that's what often happens with science. And what I've learned when I've taught my kids over the course of the last few years is that if I want them to really enjoy science, that it needs to come through play and through figuring things out, right? It's when they're playing, then they're learning. And that, I think, is true in general for all of us a lot more than some of these other things. Before, when I'd do science and I'd gather up the experiments and we'd follow the instructions and we'd do something cool and then promptly they'd forget it and go move on and do something else. But now, when I've learned that if we can incorporate things from play and from games, and I can give them a challenge, and then they're figuring it out as they go, all of a sudden the science starts to mean a little bit more. So I'll go into more details about that in just a second. there's a huge difference between just doing experiments and learning through play. So do you guys have questions about that, or is there kind of... I'll go into details about this a little bit more, but I think that that's critical. That difference between just doing the experiments and then how can we actually learn through play, that's a very critical kind of thing to be understanding. So how do we then teach through play? How do we use play to teach our kids science or to teach really anything? But I'm going to focus a little bit on science. And specifically, I want to focus on games. So I love... games. I love all types of games. I've actually designed my own, I've designed some games, specifically escape rooms. The other games I'm not quite as good at. But I love learning about games. And so I'll talk about, just a second, what makes something a gamer. I want you guys to think about this. Right? I'm going to make this big. Any type of game. Sports, video games, board games, even social games, tag. Right? What is it that they all have in common that makes something a game? What would you guys say? What do you think? Yeah.
There's a challenge.
Okay. Yeah.
There's a winner and a loser.
Okay. Oftentimes there's a winner or a loser.
They're playing.
Yeah. Somehow they're playing. Yeah. That's an important part.
There's some sort of rule, like rule
or. Okay. Yeah.
Guidelines.
Yeah. Somehow there's some guidelines or rules. There's some parameters around what's happening. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, no, those are great insights. I think those are all exactly right. My favorite definition comes from this book. It's called The Art of Game Design. And he has a whole chapter actually devoted to how do you define a game. So he talks about all of those aspects of it. But this is my favorite definition I've come across, is a game is a problem-solving activity approached with a playful attitude, right? So somehow a game needs to include some sort of play, and there's always a challenge or some sort of problem-solving aspect to it. Right, so you could say that, for a board game, your goal is to get around the board the fastest, or whatever the goal of the game is, there to win. You know, if you're playing Mario World, then your goal is to go save Princess Peach from Bowser, right? If you're playing tag, your goal is to not be it, or if you're it, it's to stop being it,
to not be it,
right? If you're playing sports, you want to win more points than the other team, right? Like, it's as simple as that. So there's always a goal, and there's always some sort of play, and as you go through it, then, you know, we have to be the ones, whoever's playing the game is the one that has to figure out how to win the game or how to reach that goal, right, that challenge. And so principle one is you want to let them be the hero, right? And that's, if you think about those games, there's those challenges, and you want them to be, they want to be the ones, you want the child to be the one who can figure it out. So in a sport, the person who's playing basketball, I mean, you love being the hero, right? When you score the points or you get the block. So any of those, let them be the hero. So what does that look like? And the idea is if you want them to create a goal, you give them a challenge, an endpoint. You ask a question. You give them a problem to solve. You create a goal. And then that leads to them feeling like they are the hero. So that's the first principle that I learned from games, is that you want the child to be the hero. That's what makes something playful and kind of fun. What does that look like? So with science, I like to give them a specific challenge. This is a challenge for my kit. I start with level one, can you make the light bulb light up? And I give them, I should have changed that picture. I just give them part of these things, a light bulb and a battery and a couple wires. And I says, hey, can you make this look light up? And then they get to try to figure out how to light it up. They choose, they figure it out, and they feel like a winner because they have the goal and they have the pieces and they get to figure it out. Okay, so here's, my daughter figuring it out. So how do you, so then this supposedly leads into principle number two. How do you help someone feel like a hero? So if that's your goal or you have a goal, you want them to feel like a hero, how do you help them? What can you do to help them feel like a hero? So in video games, the video games do this so well. There's a reason that people love video games, right? In video games, they're not telling you what to go do, right? They don't necessarily tell you, oh, go jump on this and get that coin and come get the sword. It's very intuitive, right? They leave it wide open and you get to go choose where you're going to go and what you're going to do, and you figure it out as you go. How do you know that these flowers kill you? Well, because you jumped on one, right? How do you know where the best place to play tic-tac-toe is? It's because you've tried all the different places and you know where you're going to win and where you're going to lose, right? How do you know what the most powerful piece is in chess? Because if you lose your queen, then it's a whole lot harder to win, right? And it comes as you practice and as you play and you discover these principles on your own, right? And so principle number two is that you discover through failure, right? And I think that's critical. I love this aspect of games because when you're playing a game, that failure just seems so natural. It's not a big deal, right? It's not, you don't actually feel like you failed when you lose your queen, but you soon learn that by losing your queen, it makes it harder to win the game. And so as you discover these games, as you go through the games and you discover what helps you win or what helps you lose, it's that failure that propels you forward to then be able to go win later. Right, when we go and our kids skin their knee, that actually helps them understand more about their body and what they can and can't, what they can and can't be comfortable with. And so it's that failure that helps them learn and grow. And so discovering through failure is critical. And this, if you were in my talk yesterday, I am going to repeat this because I think it's such a great study and important thing to say. But it's easy for us to say, let them figure it out until they're actually failing, right? Because the moment that they're actually failing or they're actually about to hurt themselves or about to do something wrong, then it feels like it hurts, right? That's hard. So when your six-year-old is wiping the table and you just had rice and the rice is getting smeared everywhere and it's falling on the ground and you're like, this is not actually getting it clean, it feels stressful as a parent. But if I go in and I start wiping the table for her, what does that actually teach her? It teaches her that she's not good enough. It teaches her that she can't do it, that mom's the only one who can do this right, right? And that she doesn't learn anything. But if instead I give her a clear goal and I say, okay, the goal is a clean table and a clean floor, so however you do that, like, this is what I expect, she can figure out how to do it however she wants, right? So there's a study done on these kids who were doing a math test, and they were doing this homework. I don't know if it was even a test, but these problems were more complicated than they knew how to do. It was outside their comfort zone. And the kids were trying to figure it out, and it was hard and it was stressful, but they were managing it. They were okay, right? And the people doing the study were measuring their stress levels, and they saw that it was okay, and they were just paying attention to that. Well, as the kids were doing this math test, the parents were watching the kids do this math test, and they were also measuring the parent stress level. And they watched as the parent stress level, as the kids were doing this, they watched the parent stress level just go up and up and up, and it rised and started kind of going crazy as they're watching the kids struggle. And so then eventually the parents would step in and be like, no, this is how you do it. Like, you want to do it this way. And the moment the parents stepped in and started showing them the right way to do it, the parent stress level dropped and started kind of flatlining because now they were working towards things. Whereas the kids' stress level started skyrocketing. because now they were basically being told, I'm not good enough, right? Like, I can't do this. And so it's really important. It's helpful, I think, to understand that as a parent, that when I step in because I'm stressed, that I'm, what I'm actually doing is by me working towards solving this problem, I'm moderating my stress, but I'm now not letting my child work through it, and so their stress level is going up. And so I have to be the adult and say, okay, it's okay for me to be uncomfortable right now. It's okay for you to fail because you're working through it, and as you work through it, like, that's the process of learning, right? So principle number two is to discover through failure. And so what does that mean for you? It means hold your tongue, be patient, let them do it, give them permission to fail. It's okay. This is part of the process. And you let them discover through failure. You don't want to take away that moment of discovery. That's the kind of that pivotal moment for them. So what does that look like? Well, here, my kids were building this little sled thing. There's a reason that the third child is on there, because when the bigger cones went on it, it went over, they went over the side, right? And they learned that they needed to build it up, and they were learning kind of as they go. So it comes as you practice this. What does this look like? This is a kit that we bought from someone else, that we build this bridge and it falls apart. I didn't include the other video. But yeah, so as she builds this bridge and it falls apart, well, so then later she gets to rebuild it again, and she makes this middle piece longer, and then it's strong enough to go through. And so as she kind of went through it and as she failed, she was able to figure out what makes it stronger and how can she actually do this. Okay, so letting them think, giving that time, realizing that that process, that thinking process, is how you learn, and it's okay to not know the right answer right away. So then, leading to principle three, the question is, well, what if they can't figure it out, right? Like, what do you do if they can't figure it out? So this is one of my favorite board games of all time. Well, yeah, it is. Harry Potter Hogwarts Battle. How many of you, have any of you guys ever played this game? We have at least one. How many of you guys are Harry Potter fans in general? I love Harry Potter. So this game is I feel like most games that are based on movies are not actually very fun. They're kind of just, they're trying to mix too many things. This one actually is good. The way it works is, in the game, there's seven different games or years throughout. And if you open up, you start by opening up game one, and there's certain rules and things that teaches you kind of the basics of the game. And then you open up game two. Once you win game one, it's a cooperative game, meaning that everyone's working against the board. So, like, you work together as a team to try to beat the bad guys in the board. Once you beat game one, then you can move on to game two, and you get new pieces and new characters and new rules, and then you get to play again and beat the board again, and then you get game three. So there's seven different kind of years, and each year, you know, you're going through, you're getting new bad guys, and you're getting new powers because you're leveling up as a wizard, and it's actually very well done, very fun, and it's done excellently. But what they do so well is they take a very complicated game. By the time you get to game seven, it's actually a very complicated long game, but they make it very accessible to anyone who's never played advanced games before, because year one is very easy, and then you add in the stuff from year two and it's still pretty approachable, and you add in stuff from year three, and as you get harder and harder, it gets more fun, but it changes, but you can easily address it because it has slowly, you've gotten better with the game, right? It's the same idea as video games. Video games do this so well. This is why they're so addicting, or one of the reasons, is because it starts out simple, right? And then you level up, and you get better, and then you start facing harder things. But this idea in games, I mean, even in sports, right? Like, you start with City League, and then you move up to High School League, and then some people go on to better and bigger things. But if they can't figure it out, the goal is to start easier and slowly get harder, right? And so I say, you know, we call that principle number three, is you want to slowly increase the difficulty. So what we can learn from games is to slowly increase the difficulty. This is a picture of my daughter. Last year, we went skiing, and I hadn't been skiing. Well, I snowboard, actually, but I hadn't been snowboarding in 15 years. And they had group classes for my older kids, and so this was my youngest. And I thought, well, that's great. My older kids can be in their group classes. They'll learn how to ski over there, and then I can help my youngest daughter, and we'll figure it out together. Well, we got up on that mountain, and it was a disaster. I couldn't remember how to do it, let alone teach her how to do it. And it just was like we were falling all over the place. We literally, the first time we went up the bunny hill, we had to walk down without our skis because I couldn't help her down the bunny hill. It was so bad. And so with my tail between my legs, I went back to the thing and I says, okay, I need a private instructor for her because we've already committed to 4 weeks of this and I am not going to do this for 4 weeks the way this is working. And so I paid for an hour of an instructor and they came and they had this little, I don't know, hula hoop thing for her to hold on to, and they taught her slowly how to stop and how to go faster. And she slowly but surely by the end of that week or that hour lesson could make it down the bunny hill on her own without anything. And I thought, sweet, that's all I needed. But the instructor knew how to help take the big goal of getting down the bunny hill and break it up into smaller goals and different games to help her be able to do that successfully. In the education world, we call this scaffolding, right? You want to scaffold something around the outside so that you can, you know, as you scaffold and you build something around the outside, then you can fix your building and then you can take the scaffolding away, right? And that's the idea. As a parent, you want to help build something into it so that you can then, the goal is eventually to take it away, but it helps them become proficient. So principle number three is to slowly increase the difficulty. What does that mean for you? It means you take a big goal and you break it into smaller pieces. You can create progressive challenges so it gets harder and harder, and you slowly start to increase that difficulty. What does that look like? So in the circuit kits that I make, again, we have different levels that we start easy, just make a circuit. Later we get to make a game with just a few different pieces, and then they can make a game with their circuit. Later we'll get a button switch and a buzzer and Morse code, and we can send secret messages to a friend. Let's make a car with headlights. You can see level 11. So now you have motors, and you're going to make different circuits together. So as far as science goes, when you're thinking about it, if you have a big goal, you say, okay, I want you to learn about circuits and electricity. I want you to learn about the cell. I want you to, whatever you're teaching, if you can break it up into smaller goals and help them slowly build up to that, that's where that kind of success looks like. So to teach through play, the idea is you want to let them be the hero. You want to let them discover through failure. And you want to look at difficulty so that they can then kind of start to figure it out. So question I want to then explore with you guys, and this is kind of coming up, so I need some questions and I want thoughts and stuff from you guys, is what if your science lessons felt less like work and felt a little bit more like game time? What would that look like? How could you incorporate that? How would that change the way that your kids see and engage in science? So let's talk about questions, or let's talk about this. Like, what does that look like? What are some of the things you guys are facing and the challenges you're having when you're trying to do this? I want to hear from you guys a little bit. Yeah?
I feel like it just gives me the freedom. My kids naturally do this.
Yes.
So instead of like, okay, we have chapter 4 today, you know, which I'm like, oh, trying to be, yeah. Instead, the things that they are creating and building, I usually allow time for that anyway, even though for me, I'm like, oh, we really should make sure we do this. But we are doing that. And so it's just a little more to be like, yep, just go for it,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because they're going to learn more that way anyway.
Exactly. And that's the goal, right? That's why I start at the beginning asking that question, like, what are some of those memories you have? Because, like, that's what you want to create for your kids, right? Like, those, we can do all the things, but you want them to have some of those core solid memories that they can lean back on, and those talents and abilities they feel like they can go change the world in their own way, right? Oh, so I appreciate that. Yeah.
The thing that I'm kind of thinking about, because my kids are like little, we're not like doing science lessons yet, really.
Sure.
But I like that model of like that Harry Potter game, and like how you set up your kit where it levels up, right? But there's like always a problem to solve And it's like, how do we solve that problem and be the hero of that? Mm-hmm. And then it like levels up and it's the same again, problem to solve, how to be the hero of that. And I think what's interesting is I'm just thinking about like how can to apply that to everything. Like maybe we're just sitting and playing, you know, with our toys, and it's like apply that principle. Or maybe we're in the kitchen, mm-hmm. apply that principle, right? Like, or you know, break it into those steps. And it's kind of like when you teach your kid to start using tools in the kitchen, right? Mm-hmm. You start small and then you add on another step and keep going, and they can eventually do more. But it's interesting to think about that in all aspects. Like, how do you apply that to other things, other subjects, other things you're doing with your kids? And then it kind of all becomes like STEM, which is mm-hmm. cool. So mm-hmm. I think that's great. I think that's a good way
yeah.
to think about it, break it down.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. I think that's helpful. Yeah, go ahead.
So I am new to
homeschooling. Okay,
I'm
yeah.
I haven't committed fully because I'm a little scared. But how do you make like STEM, science, math? Because I remember in school, I hated it. Because I'd go home, ask my dad for help, and you'd get frustrated, like, it's so easy. How come you're not getting it? And so, in turn, like, now that I'm the parent, how can you make STEM lessons, like, not so intimidating to be the person teaching it, or to have them be excited and not intimidated, like, oh, math class again. Like, how do you get that creativity and motivation to power through those harder lessons?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, to me, a big part of it is this idea of giving them a challenge to work through, right? Like, when they have a goal, like, being told to do something, or what's the right way to say this? I feel like it's just, like, when you have something that you're working towards, then you can kind of rise up to that a whole lot better than if you're being told. Go ahead, you had a comment.
I think, as I'm listening to this, the thought that comes to my mind is it has to have a purpose, right? So when you're doing math problems on a sheet of paper, it just doesn't make sense. But if you're having to make a cake and you have to figure out, okay, we're going to double this recipe, to me, there's like, that's the purpose, that's the goal, and that's where I feel like I can really engage, because I want to make a cake. I'm interested in that. But if you want me to do all those fractions and things on a piece of paper, that's boring. There's no goal. There's no excitement in that. Mm-hmm. So the more that you can think about how can I engage this in a real-life, practical way, the more engaging it will be.
Yeah. No, I think that's great. Yeah.
I agree with that. I think with the math thing, sometimes they just... I know that that's not like a fun answer, but my son has been working and reworking like very long division recently, and it's hard. It's hard stuff that he has to do, but he had to solve a really hard problem at his friend's house the other day, and he did it, and it all came full circle, and he was like, I did it. Like, I figured out this problem. Did you see me do that at your house the other day? And I was like, yeah, and he's like, I see why it's important, and now it's in front of me, and I was able to solve this really big science problem because I had it. And so, I just think it's important to be like, I know it's really hard, but let's keep pushing through, let's take a break, let's walk away, and then come back to it, and soon, you'll start to see how this all plays mm-hmm. together.
Yeah.
So I've got... a lot of years of homeschooling, I guess, or my wife has, I should say. So what we have found is doesn't matter. So my wife's like, well, you gotta know this math, okay? You gotta know this math. I says, okay, besides this assignment, show me where you use it. Okay? Now, I'm not saying it's not used. I says, you want to have a science project? Right now, we're working on a Stirling engine. We're building it, and it's pretty fun. Okay, now we got to throw a lot of science buggers, right? Now, this is a big project. But these kids are saying, okay, I got to understand math as at this level. What are they going to do? They're going to find it. They're not backing down. They're like, we want to build this sucker, Dad. I said, all right, well, then how much heat does it require, and how are you going to get it, and how are you going to get this to make this motor run? And they're like, well, and we need this much torque, and I mean, it's
lots to think through, yeah.
I said, now, all of a sudden, their functionality is saying, well, I need to take this math equation, for example, like we got to do this long division problem, they will do it. Now, I told my wife, can you take the derivative of a product? She says, I haven't done that since college. So I said, so does it matter to you? It only matters to you when you have to apply it, like cooking. You're going to use it when you're cooking. You have to. Mm-hmm. So those little things, and as young, like, give them something that it applies to more than the mash. The mashy, who cares? Let me know, who cares? And you're going to do it your whole life. This is not just a one-time deal. And well, if I don't get it if you're not a super genius by the time you're 13, you're an idiot. No, you're going to do this until you die.
Yeah.
And so don't worry so much if you don't get it right for a long time.
Yeah.
Just keep, do like what she said, be persistent and keep at it and suck it up a little bit. I mean, that's important too, but don't worry too much.
Both, I think, yeah, all of that. And that's the balance that's hard as a homeschooling mom, right, is when do I keep pushing and we have to suck it up? When do I stop and try to make this fun? And that's kind of what you have to decide, right, is what's most important right now. But to answer, going to go back and to answer your question about how do I make math and science fun for them or not feel like it's about the knowledge all the time or that I'm dumb. And to me, it comes from when you have a project, when you have something you care about, when you have something fun to do that they are excited about. And I mean, so if your goal is to teach fractions or to teach, I mean, what math are you? What are they in right now?
Almost in kindergarten, and then a 2-year-old.
Okay, so they're little. Okay, so then that's not. So then at that point, it's just playing. Truthfully, at that point, you're not stressed about the content at all. Mm-hmm. Like I would not worry about the content. Very little, right? Very, very little, very little. Yeah, and then.
Kind of along that line, like, you know, less like work and more like fun and like how they're getting interested in is like you just kind of find out what their interests are. Not that you shouldn't push and like get them to do explore mm-hmm. other things, but maybe like I have one child that really likes cooking. So it's like there's science in the kitchen, there's math in the kitchen and mm-hmm. things like that. Or when we're working on a project, like we do use the Pythagorean theorem. When people say, when do we ever use this? A squared plus B squared plus C squared. Mm-hmm. We used it at least twice, like when we've built a shed and when we've put up a fence. You have to use it to make sure
yep.
your corners are square. And it's like
if you're building a chicken coop, like there's lots
yes.
to figure out, right?
Like things like that. And that's what we working on those projects as a family. We're like, okay, this is when you apply this math. And so it's kind of just using those projects, those moments to like this is why we do what we do.
One of the other stories that came to mind when I was in seventh grade, I had just been taking algebra in my math class, and then I was in, I don't know, some tech class or something, and we made paper rockets, and we would shoot the paper rockets up, and we'd see who could go highest. I have no idea who won, but I remember just learning about angles and how to, like, use angles to measure things. And I remember being in math, or in seeing those rockets go up, and the teacher, like, measuring the angle for how high each rocket went up. And then me and a couple of my classmates being like, oh, wait, we can figure out how high these rockets went. Like, if we know this angle and we know the distance between where we're at and the rocket launcher, we can see how high that was. Does it really matter? Not necessarily. But for a seventh grader, that was really cool to be like, oh, I can figure out how high this went. Right. And so those, I think, are good examples of how to make this when it applies, when it matters. All of a sudden, you're happy to learn it, and it makes more sense, right? And so that play is truthfully how we learn as humans. I think even it, you know, from little up to old, and we kind of know that. I think lots of us, especially homeschooling moms, understand that it's important. Play is important when they're little. But I love your example of how play looks different when you're older. But if you're building engines and stuff, it still is that kind of form, and it's still, I mean, it's the best form of learning. Like you really can't learn better than when you care. And you're engaged in a playful manner, right?
There was something, I've got my son and a friend, they're seniors in high school, mm-hmm. and they've got this big thing that they're doing economics and government. Both of both of them, reading is not their thing. One doesn't really care, history and all this kind of stuff, he's more the math science guy. And I'm like, we have this big file that I need to give him. How can I? So I was like, okay, so I turned it into an escape room. So okay. This week they're going to have this huge escape room. Like,
to solve
that. If they can escape, they can escape government and economics. You know?
And they're done. Yes.
Yeah, I was like, oh, this is something. You know? So hopefully it's fun.
Well, hopefully it works great. Yeah, I love it. That's right up my alley.
So
anyone else? Yeah.
What are your favorite games that you like to teach?
That teach things?
Like, you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
In, like, like, we love Ticket to Ride, and I was thinking...
Ticket to Ride's fun, uh-huh.
Kids, like, mm-hmm. How to save up or buy or look for where they're going. And mm-hmm. Like, it just teaches them so many good things.
Mm-hmm.
What are your favorite ones for...
That's a great question. So, for... I'll just share... Okay, so I'll give a range. So, my favorite... one I love is King Domino. This is a good one for, particularly if you're trying to teach math, but it feels fun. But King Domino, you have different tiles that you're playing, and you're trying to match the wheat next to the wheat and the woods next to the woods. And I love this particularly, well, with a range of kids, because for the youngest kids, they're learning, I wish I could show it. But basically, you have these tiles, and they're numbered on the back from 1 to 48 or whatever, and you pick 4 at a time, and then you have to put them in order from... of whatever 4 you chose, you have to put them in order. So the 5-year-old will put them in order, put the 5 and then the 22 and then the 38 and the 40 next to each other. And so it's good for the 5-year-old to figure it out. And then you flip it over and then you choose and then you play them. And then at the end, you're having to do multiplication to figure out like how many points you get based on, you know, if you have 3 wheat fields together and each wheat field counts as 2 points or whatever. Anyway, so then there's some like multiplication and stuff going involved. So that one's a fun as far as that goes. As far as like another one I love is called Robo Rally. This is like a programming type, thinking ahead in logical steps game. But you have different robots, and then you have different cards that you have to program your robot. You're trying to get to the flag the fastest, and so you'll put the card. And you'll be like, I'm gonna move forward 3, and then I'm gonna turn right, and then I'm gonna move forward 2, and then I'm gonna turn left. And then you're shooting each other, and different things happen, and so then it gets quite chaotic. But that is like how to think through things ahead. I actually meant to write down some of these and then I forgot. So I'm trying to just think off the top of my head. Are there specific things you want? I mean, I love games, so we have tons. We have a whole cupboard full. But is there specific things you like would want to teach or questions you have? You're just kind of wondering about games
like
in general?
More
Yeah, there's not many physics related. There's tons of biology ones. Wingspan is a great one about birds. There's one called Evolution that kind of just teaches the idea of natural selection and different things. There's one called Biomes, which we did when we were learning about. That one's a card game, and it basically teaches how in order for a biome you need scavengers and you need producers and you need different carnivores. So that one's kind of a science-y one. And then there's a bunch of chemistry ones, which I actually haven't explored a whole lot, but I know there's some, and when we get to chemistry, then I'll see how good they are. I'll try them and see. Jennifer, you had another comment, I think.
Did we lose? A little bit more math, but I like mm-hmm. Battleship
for
the graphing.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Just learning. Yep. I think that's the thing, is that truthfully any game, like whether it's actually science content or math content or not, like games, board games in general do a lot to teach logical thinking and other things. I was realized, anyway, yeah, I just think games in general have a lot of value that way. Yeah.
I think also just like playing dice with math, especially when they're little, to like have 2 dice to be able to
have. Actually, I will say yes. I will add to that, Can't Stop is a favorite one as far as dice and math goes. Teaches a little bit of statistics. The idea is there's this board, and you're trying to get... Anyway, I'll just leave it at that. You can look it up if you want. The idea is Can't Stop, but that one's great for quick adding. Kind of like you say, you roll 4 dice, and then you can choose which 2 to put together, and it also teaches statistics. 7s are a lot more likely to be rolled with 2 dice than 12s or Catan. It's kind of that same idea, but Can't Stop is one I love. Yeah.
So can I get advocate for Dungeons and Dragons for like a lot of mental math? I hated math growing up. Well, that's like kind of D&D. It's like, okay, I want to kill that guy over there. I have my bow has a 60-foot range.
Now all of a sudden you can do math when you couldn't before. I love it. That's perfect. Yeah, thank you. Okay, well, I think our time's about up. Any other last questions or comments? Or anyway, okay, well, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. That was Lindsay's science one.
I keep coming back and grabbing stuff. Yep. Mm-hmm. They go with the making of America. There's a like a
the
book.
The big fat book.
Uh-huh.
I have it.
Okay, good. Because I don't have those.
And, yeah, I know. But you guys have this.
Yes. I've got tons more of these. Oh, okay.
Names in.
Hey, I've got more. Oh, don't leave if you need more.
You're one of the only ones I could have been.
Yes.
I should put my phone number in here. Like, if you say, like, I have a name.
I have the Adrian. I have.
He's right there.
Okay. I'm gonna be the one.
Oh, it's still recording.